if a parent does that. Now, the question is to be strict or lenient. I don't think it makes any difference. It doesn't make, as long as you're consistent, it doesn't make any difference. So to be, you have to just be consistent. And it doesn't matter. It doesn't make any difference in a child's life if the child comes from a stricter discipline or less strict. That, as long as it's consistent and it's done for the purpose of the child and there's a consistency of the child, these are the rules and that's it. You can have less rules, more rules. Doesn't make, yes, they have to be consistent. But of course, it would seem logical that the rules should be such that when the child is in the presence of society or other people, that they don't appear as crazy or other people don't object to them. If your child is undisciplined, so the first harm you're doing for the child is the following. That the child enters a situation where, let's say, they enter they're playing with other children, and they're undisciplined and they used to get in their way. So they come into a certain system. Now the other child is has a different kind of system. So now this child is going to find that they meet with rebuke from the outside, and there will be rebuke. Because the parents of the other child are not going to be happy to see their child being smacked around because they must have their toy or whatever it might be. So the other parents are going to be upset, and that resentment is going, again, resentment will not be able to be concealed. Even if you know the parent, the other parent, you speak to them, it's not going to help, because behind your back they're going to take care of their child, and they're not going to allow this undisciplined child to wreck their child, right? So they're going to transmit some shocks to your child. Now, I don't think those shocks are going to destroy the child, because the main thing in a child's world is the parent. But it's not a good thing, and it's certainly not it doesn't make sense to do things that are not good. Even though these things might not make the ultimate difference. So it's not good to create an environment for a child where a child thinks that this is the way the world is, and then they come into the presence of another child which doesn't have that world, and then what happens is they're met with a big surprise. Hey, it's over here, these rules don't work. So it's bad, because the rules of reality are not the ones that are working. And it's upsetting to the child. I don't know how upsetting, but I don't think it's a good thing. It doesn't seem to me that that's a good thing to learn. Okay? So an undisciplined child is definitely not a good thing. How much discipline should there be? Again, I say it depends. That depends a lot on you, as long as it's consistent. But it certainly should be, at the minimal level, one in which the child, when they appear with other children, will not be out of whack. Okay? And that they'll be in line. That I would say is a gauge that you can use. That's a gauge you can use. Okay. But there's something more subtle here again. And that is, the undisciplined child, the danger there is really, when I see an undisciplined child, it's not so much the discipline itself, but it shows them. It shows that this parent is using this child for their own fantasy. See, that's what it shows. Because why is the child undisciplined? Because the parent can't do it. Because it's much easier, much more sensible to have rules for children in the house. But why is the child undisciplined? The child's undisciplined because the parent doesn't want to be disciplined. See? And the parent is acting out through the child their own fantasies and their own wishes. You see? Now, why doesn't the parent want to be disciplined? I think it's more subtle, it goes even further than that. It's because to be disciplined means to be ordinary. You see? In other words, a person will not want to discipline the child, because then the child's just an ordinary child that has to be disciplined just like every other child. But no, this child is special, doesn't need to be disciplined. So there you see, when you see an undisciplined child, what you're looking at is a parent acting out their fantasies on the child. That is clearly what is taking place. And that is the real harm. Not so much the question of the discipline or undiscipline, like I said. That, I think, is bad if the child encounters a world where the way they're coming from a system where they meet with tremendous opposition in the real situation. That's not good. That, I don't think, is good. I would classify that as not good and maybe even bad. But really bad, really harmful, is the fact that when you have an undisciplined child, it means that the parent is acting out through this child their own fantasies of the child being something very special, which is a reflection of their feelings about themselves, and therefore they can't undergo the ordinary process of being disciplined. That's an ordinary process which makes the child mediocre. Makes them just ordinary. They have to be disciplined like every other child. That is the danger. That is really the harm. So it's not so much the discipline or undiscipline, but the fact that the undiscipline betrays a certain feeling that the parent has, and it's a symptom and a sign of a far greater harm which is going to take place because of the attitude of the parent towards the child. Okay? Okay. All right, now let's go. Sure, yes, so the question. So the answer is, doesn't matter. If you're living on a farm, you leave your child to work, the young child, he has to work in the barn and do work 10 hours a day, it's not going to harm. If you're living in your house and you want to give him chores, fine. Just be consistent. Just be consistent. There's no difference if a child does chores for 10 minutes a day or if the child does chores for 10 hours a day. It's not going to make any difference in the psyche of the child. Well, no chores is already, again, an indication. It's not so much the no chores thing. I don't think the child needs chores. I don't think that that's true. I would say, though, if I see a child that the parent does not ask him to do anything, it might be a deeper-rooted problem. Might be. Again, these things aren't that simple. A human being is very complex and subtle. But I would say it's definitely a red flag. It's definitely something indicating something is not really good here. It's fun. There's something strange. I say the possibility of the parent, again, acting out their own fantasies on the child, through the child, is something which is probably going on. Yes?
What about
there again. You see, when you teach a child to be respectful, there's a subtle catch also. Because what you're doing is, if you're teaching the child to be respectful by imposing force, you're not really teaching the child to be respectful. You see, if you want to teach a child to be respectful, I'm not saying that force is never good either. I don't want you to think that. I don't think it, because sometimes it's a means of drawing attention to something. You see, that might be good. I'm not saying it's never good. See. But I'm saying that if you just implement that kind of a system, what you're just teaching the child is not to respect anybody, but just to be worried about your reaction. See, that's really what you teach the child. But if you want to teach the child respect, then if you act respectfully towards the child, and you act respectfully towards others, and the child sees that this is the right way to act, you can tell the child, look, this is the way you act towards another person. You see, I do that too. Then you're teaching child respect. That's something else. That's the proper way. But you're not teaching a child to respect by coercing the child into a situation where they always act respectfully. It'll work in youth, early stages, but eventually it's going to backfire because that's not what you're teaching. But it's a subtle thing. You gotta. But again, I'm not saying force is never good. No, because that sometimes attracts the attention of the child. But it depends what the underlying theme is, you see. But if you act respectfully, then the child will know that that's the right way to act. And it has to be a system. The child engages, too. You see, if it's not fair, it says, well, how can you do this? See? You're not going to get away with it. You're not going to be able to simply say, you're a child, so you have to do this. That is crazy. That's not possible. Yes.
How about giving kids candy for a good form of school? Giving kids candy for things that they don't necessarily find pleasant, but you want to sort of.
Sure, that's good. There's nothing wrong with that. Nothing wrong with an alternate gratification. There's nothing, absolutely nothing wrong with that. That's good. That's a very good thing. That's what you mentioned about the Rambam. Candy. Somebody raised their question. Yeah, that's fine. That's good. No, there's nothing wrong with that. I would say like this. If the child does it for the candy, it's okay. But if a child does it because the parent is giving them candy, then they're bad. So, and it shouldn't be that you're behind the screen programming this candy process, you know what I mean, in order to obtain your goal. Because then, again, the child's going to have a sense. It has to be, it's a subtle thing. I mean, you've got to be aware of it. And again, the messages that the child gets are very, very, very delicate. I mean, the delicate mechanism of dealing with it. You're not going to be able to fool the child. Yes. It's not the child is fine. I mean, all these methods are good, provided that the reality is that the underlying love for the child is not at stake.
That's not your thought.
By the way, you know, I mean. In this respect, I disagree with Freud, because he maintained that a mother that is very, very a mother that really is very involved with a child, and that this will result in great confidence in the child. The mother loves the child very much. Many times. You find these kind of mothers, you know, that are very much into their children, their child is the greatest and most outstanding, and that this will give the child a tremendous confidence in life. Now, the thing is like this. It is true, but it's a double-edged sword, and I think most of the time it's going to fail. Because, again, if the child really is a truly outstanding genius, so then when that transference to the world takes place, there will be some reality for it. So the child will be able to make that transference. You know? Again, it's not going to be good in the long run, because no matter how outstanding what the child's going to encounter is not going to be what the parent was giving him. He said. But in an ordinary case, it would be disastrous, because the child is going to think that they are right, have tremendous confidence, which is based on nothing and not based on any kind of intelligence, and therefore they're doomed to do stupid things and just feel confident. Will they walk around feeling confident? Oh, they'll feel confident. But that kind of confidence is stupid confidence. What you really want to produce in a child is confidence that's based on intelligence, not on just a feeling. That feeling leads to disaster. So while psychologically it may be true, practically it's devastating. Practically, in the practical world, it's devastating. Freud was talking on a psychological plane. You see, strictly psychological. But it is not the real. It's not the real plan in terms of human existence. It's going to backfire. Okay. Yeah.
Well, looking for a human situation for your child, or a playgroup situation.
Right.
How important is it to look at peer influences or look at potential negative peer influences?
All those things that you have to look at in a light way. Don't get over involved. I mean, it's not, don't take it seriously. It's always good to create the best situation, and you always try to do that. But don't overestimate. It's not going to make a real difference. Don't, unless Santa or phone call. I mean, I don't think it will be a real difference, this school, that school. It's not going to make that much difference. I mean, I wouldn't subject my child to a teacher that's, a vicious teacher or something like that. I certainly wouldn't do that. I mean, but, you know, real extreme cases to try to avoid. But don't overestimate the subtleties of it. That's not the place to be subtle. The place to be subtle is with yourself. That's the real area to be subtle. Not so much with the external environment of, that exists in the general educational situation. Over there, you can be a little loose. Yeah.
Well, I think there are serious long-term harmful effects.
Albert Einstein was forced to, like, he had a German education, and he was forced like crazy. He was subjected to the worst kind of education, and he himself said he hated it. And for a year after graduating, was it Polytech, whatever it was, so he couldn't even study mathematics for 1 year. He had to just run the mountains just to get it out of the system. but apparently got out of the system. So, and he needed psychoanalysis, and it didn't stop him. So you're not going to turn on or off these kind of forces.
That's true, but wouldn't it have been better if you didn't have to go
over? Wouldn't we hear something greater than those
videos? No.
Better. That's what I said, better, but not really. A major difference it wouldn't be. A major difference would be because he was a thinker. By nature, he was a deep thinker, and all the turning off didn't work. So you don't turn off these kind of forces. They're very, very powerful forces, and they're not simple things. So just by ramming knowledge down a kid's throat, that's not going to really... You may slow him off, his course a little bit. He would have gotten an altimeter at 24 instead of 25. But the you're not going to really... you're not going to make it. You're not going to... This is not major. This is not major. Major is... What I try to tell you is the way you look at the child and how much knowledge you have of yourself. That's major. That is major. This is not major. Yes?
Yeah, when a child is crying, you can't tell
him
what. So is it
the parents' fault? I have a suggestion in that area. I'm glad you mentioned it. There's one thing I said. There's always the problem. The big problem is with the child going to sleep at night, the first year. So the thing is this, and this is my opinion. I mean, the thing is that I don't think it's good to take that the mother should take the child in their bed with them and sleep with them. I don't think it's good. Not a good practice, because psychologically I don't think it's a good thing for the child. But besides that, it's going to lead eventually to a very difficult situation where the child's going to have to break away from that. That comfort that it was used to. That's certainly not good. But I think that a child should not sleep with the parent. I'm not saying ever, and sometimes, unusual situations, yeah, it's okay to take the baby in bed, but, unusual situation, not normal. But what I would suggest is this. The thing is that the child falling asleep is a big problem, because they get up and cry, and the parent, wants to sleep. It's a very important situation for the parent. So but what I would suggest is not to let a child cry and this I saw from a psychologist that I respect. Not to let a child get into a real, an undercry, like a cry where they start, it's a different than a normal cry. They really start crying in a violent way, kind of. You know what I mean? Trying to describe. So that is bad. But what I would say is that I think that is a danger that the child may encounter too much pain from the outside world and kind of, go back into themselves, which is not good. But what I would suggest is that the parent should wean the child by, when the child cries a little bit, the child cry a little bit, and then go into the room and let the child be aware that you're in the room. And you put your hand on the child so the child does not lose the break between the outside world and themselves, and at the same time is not satisfied, so they have to, wean themselves from that situation and learn how to sleep through the night themselves. That's what I would suggest. Which age? That starts at about puberty. Breaks. It starts breaking. That's a big break. It's a pretty sudden break. It's a pretty sudden break. Yeah.
In terms of how do you avoid that?
Same rule. Same thing. It's all the same. It doesn't matter whether it's chinuch or mitzvah or anything. I mean, chinuch is everything. It's not just, chinuch is real chinuch is everything. The whole way of life. So you always involve chinuch. So that's why the rabbis say the mother is just as much a rabbi and child as the father. Because, you involve the mother is the one essentially, the mother that really does the work that's most foundational. It's done by the mother. There's no question about that. There's no question about that. And that goes without saying. The biggest mechanic, if you want to talk in general kinds of things, is really the mother.
I guess there was one, though, where you only not to do it, you basically just force him to follow your will.
Well, you see, the thing is like this. The thing is that if you're raising a normal child and you follow the pattern, properly, then you shouldn't have a case. You shouldn't have. I mean, the child will naturally want to eat in the circle. I mean, I'm not saying totally naturally, but all I would say is this. I'd say the same rule would apply to anything else. In other words, that you can't use it. It shouldn't be any different than anything else, where the rules that you impose should be equal and, of course, fair and intelligent and consistent. And that's the answer. The same thing, there's no difference. What area you're using those rules doesn't make any difference. It's the important thing is that the rules should be right. The system should be right. Okay? Yes.
At the beginning of the discussion, you were mentioning that it's best to teach three-year-old Chaim.
Right.
But you want to teach him to do certain things in terms of developing his skills.
Yes.
Right? So let's say you want to teach your four-year-old kid how to read.
Right.
But it's not really in terms of his development. He might not be as ready as a different four-year-old.
Yeah, that's right. You're right. That's what the Gemara says. As a matter of fact, that's one thing I will tell you. The Chazal were very insistent on not educating very early. They were very insistent. The Gemara says, one Gemara says, I don't want to see your kids here under the age of 7. So, but the Gemara says 6 or 7. That's exactly the right age, not 3 and 2. That's a big mistake in this society, that they're trying to create super children. So we went to school at 6. Now we go at 2. So we're definitely advancing. Okay, it's not leaving too much room for advance in the future, but that's prenatal education. But the thing is, that is very harmful. That's very, very harmful. That's very harmful. Because the child is being educated in a way that you can't even imagine natural in the very early years. And that education has very much to do with the mother, as I mentioned, the mother is the main person. And to interfere in terms of your education, it's like a secondary education, completely secondary, and maybe even less than that. So you don't want to interfere with that early process. As Chazal say, 6 years old, then 6 or 7 years old. If I were able to, I'd say that they should stop the early education and start around 6 or 7, as Chazal said, because that's really the age where the child is ready for, and to introduce them to it before is not good. It's not good. That I would say, I would put that on the offer.
Does it work for all the skills, or right? Just reading?
Not going to make at 12. It's not going to make any difference whether the child started reading at 3 or started reading at 7. Not going to make any difference. So you always look ahead. You know what I mean? And just think, is there any real value in this, or this is just a momentary high because you did something looks outstanding? You know? That's the danger. Okay? I would definitely say, that's one thing I would say that's an important thing. You should not engage in early education. You should not. That could be harmful. That's harmful. Yes. You're interrupting very important processes. Interrupting. You should not interrupt.
You have
then it's you. Then you got to figure out what's bothering you. But not how to change the kid. Just like any other thing in reality. If something's bothering you, 90% of the time it's you. Okay. Yeah. Yes.
I'm just on the feed about time out. Like if a child, for example, hits their sibling, tries to react, and let's say you place the child in the room for a minute or so.
You go from more than a minute. Yeah, you have to control those things. You can't let one child bash another child. You just can't.
After the fact, they're no longer, they bash the child, and now it's done. Now they're on to the next thing.
Next child. Do you what? Do you punish the child? That's the question.
Yeah.
Absolutely. There's nothing wrong with it. You have to discipline the child. I mean, don't be afraid to discipline the child. Remember, it's not you.
Now, if the child has learned, you know, they go and they bash the child and then they take themselves into their own room, does that defeat the purpose?
You mean the injury? It's like, no, first they bash the child and they go in their room. I mean, then you have to impose some other kind of restrictions. Sometimes, I would say this, sometimes you simply have to restrain the child. You can't let one child harm another child. You have to restrain them. Any means. I mean, you just have to stop them. I mean, you can't, there's one thing I want to say, you can't get too involved in fairness among children, because children, like all of us, are very unfair, but they're just not ashamed about it. So the thing is that you can't get involved too much when children are unfair amongst each other. That's something that they have to work on. The older one takes advantage of the younger one. That's a kind of a process, but the younger one does develop certain of their own survival techniques, right. So you can't get into this too much, but you can't allow a child to harm another child. That you can't, or when you see it's really cruel, and the younger one is suffering, you have to step in. I mean, you can't just, you know, it's like the Gemara says, the formula is makariv b'min merachik b'smol. There's got to be a limbo. Sometimes limbo is the right target, to be in limbo. So, you know, sometimes you have to impose your own restraints, and sometimes you have to not. But you certainly can't abide by a fixed rule. I'm not going to get involved. And when the one child beat up the younger child, no, you just can't do that.
That's the child
smacked. Hey, then you have to stop it. You should absolutely, you should not allow it. You should stop.
No, it stopped. It's already done. It did it once. Now, is there be a consequence you take yourself
through,
or just let it go?
You have to know how. I can't give answers like that. Because to me, in education and raising a child is a whole process. It is not. I can't give an answer. I have to see what the whole approach to the child is to know whether this, to do this in this instance is correct or not. I can't answer such a question. You know what I mean? It's not possible. I mean, for some child it may be, for some child it may not be. But again, I can't say there's no fixed rule. I can't say every time a child hits a parent, you have to severely punish them. I don't think that's true either. I mean, you got to. The best advice I can give you is you have to try to understand what's going on in the child's mind. Sometimes in the child's mind, something really—it's really horrible. So if they smack a parent or if they do something that is disrespectful, you have to also understand that they don't understand respect and disrespect. So then they do something that to an ordinary person would be disrespectful. Like if somebody was spit in your face, it would be very disrespectful. But if a child does it, they don't have that concept. So you can't take things in the wrong way. You have to try to understand that to them it's just a reaction. You know, it's important to realize that our sophisticated judgments of things are not the judgment of the child. You have to try a little bit to put yourself in the child's mind, because you want to educate the child according to their intelligence and their understanding. You see, and they have an understanding. It's just different. But that's what I'm saying. I can't get rid of it. Should a child be allowed to smack the parent? No. But does that mean if a child smacks the parent once, you should really come down hard on the child? I mean, no. That's not, I mean, they never can do it? No. That would be crazy to say that. I mean, you have to know the situation and try to understand what's going on. And again, undiscipline is bad. But the discipline should be based on an understanding of the child's mind, not the way you feel about it, not the way you react to it. And you have to realize that some of the worst things in a sophisticated mind to a child are normal, like murderous intentions, you know, death wishes, or, you know what I mean, or all kind of thinking about things that to us sound horrible, to the child it's absolutely normal. So you have to understand, have a little bit of knowledge and understanding of what a child is and the way they think, and not to react on a mature, systematic, in terms of a mature framework. It's not a mature framework. That would be a big mistake. It's not a mature framework. It's an immature framework. So you have to have some understanding of that. And that's a separate parasha, though. I mean, that's a whole separate thing. Like, that would require, like, a, completely different kind of a discussion, you know what I mean? To go into what the child's mind is like. You can't do that. It's a separate thing. Okay.
How do you effectively discipline without giving them the impression that the parents love the child?
You see, I'm not... You're right. I mean, in every act of discipline, there is an element of that. But it's a different kind of a thing. It's not... It's an element... The child... See, this is an important distinction. The child knows when you discipline them that's why they get the shape, because they realize they're losing the parental love. But it's not the parental love for the parent. That's the key. You see? The child... You know what I mean? The child does not... think that if you discipline a child and the child thinks that they do this, they lose the parental love, that's fine. But as long as it's within the framework of the child, not that they're losing the parental love because they're not satisfying the parent, that's a major distinction. A child will never be upset if they realize that the parent disciplines them because that's for they have to do this. Is the right thing to do. Then on the contrary, they see that as the love of the parent. You see, that's not a contradiction. The contradiction is where they sense it's because the parent wants something out of them. That is the contradiction. That's an important distinction. These are subtle points. You have to think into it. There's a big, and the point may be subtle, but the difference is enormous.
So if you remove the parental love by saying, I don't like that,
right. See, it depends. Let me just say, the general rule is, if it's for the benefit of the child, you see, then the child knows that it is chancing or losing the love of the parent. That's fine. You see, as long as it's within the framework of the child, because the child knows that it's the right thing. They have a sense of right and wrong, and they know, and that's okay. Because then you're not saying that your love for the child is contingent on the child being a tool of your desire. It's for the child, and that's fine. There's nothing wrong with it. That's good. Otherwise, you can't discipline the child. You're right. Every act of discipline is an act of taking away love. It's true. And therefore, that involves another problem. Most people want very much to be loved. And if they identify with the child, then they can't discipline the child for another reason. Not just, as I mentioned before, because they want the child to be exceptional, but because of the fact that they themselves can't tolerate a loss of love. And since they identify with the child, so therefore they can't discipline the child, because by doing that, they're endangering their own loss of love, the loss of love for themselves, you see? And that's a big catch. That's a very tricky thing. So an undisciplined child is also a reflection, and can very well be, that could be the major, I don't know which one, that could be the major component. I didn't mention that before. That's a significant thing, that everybody wants to be loved, so if you identify with your child, you can't discipline your child, then you, it's a fact, are losing love, so you can't do it. So you have to remember that, I mean, that's an important thing. Identification with a child is a big danger, or let me put it this way. You're always going to have an identification. Being unaware of your identification with the child is a big danger. Okay?
The child's right and wrong are not exactly the same.
Doesn't matter. It does not matter. See, you're asking a logical question, but I'll give you a psychological answer. Your question is that the child doesn't understand why you're disciplining them. So they think that they're just losing your love. You see? So let's say the child wants to run out in the street, and there are cars in the street. So how could you stop them? You have to make a choice now. Which danger is worse? The danger of the cars, or the danger of the child losing their love? Okay, in this case, the danger of the cars. But the thing is, it's not true. Why? I'll tell you why it's not true. Because, as I mentioned before, there is a subtle communication between the child and the parent. And if you are, in fact, doing it for the child will sense that. And that is why, that is the difference.
If you work as a teacher in a classroom, does that
subtle
love, does that also go through?
If you work as a teacher in a classroom.
So, does that subtle love also
get? Oh, yeah, that's the whole thing. And a teacher in a classroom can really make use of, of all these elements. for their own good. But that's not bad. I mean, that's the way you have to do it. You know, that's really how a teacher controls. That's how a teacher controls the class. Teacher is outnumbered by the school. and I always used to wonder. I walk into classes, and when I was younger, I thought in classes a lot of them were undisciplined. Sometimes to sit there, I don't know why these kids are just sitting here listening to me. But the thing is that it really is. It's these three, these drives, the feelings that really control. You're setting yourself up as a kind of a super ego figure, and therefore that's why the teacher controls the classroom. It's successful. No need to judge, but that's the element. That's the element. Okay. Yes. Yeah, I would never let the child get to the point where they have that really, like I said, I can't describe it as like a violent cry. It's like a different kind of a cry. I would not allow a child to get to that kind of cry, no matter what. That's right. That's why I said you can't make any fast rules. You know, that's why I say you can't say never take the baby in your belly. You can't make these rules. You know, I just give you a general picture. You know, I mean, you can't. I would say never. I would say never allow the child to really get into that violent kind of a cry. That, it seems, could be harmful. I don't know for sure, but that is really worthwhile avoiding. And it can be avoided. It does take a lot of work on the part of the parent. I mean, the truth of the matter is, it's not an easy situation. It's very, very demanding. It is a very demanding situation. There's no question about it. I mean, it takes away a night's sleep, and it's not an easy process. But the only thing is that the alternative of trying to short-circuit it is not worth it, because you pay for it heavily. Yes?
What if that child's violent reaction is to remove the parental love?
No, that's why you never want to do that. You see, even when you're correcting the child, the child doesn't really feel that it is absolutely losing your love, because, like I said, the child senses you're doing it for the child. So the real love is never in jeopardy. The real love is only in jeopardy if the child thinks that he is worthless, unless he satisfies your wishes. That's where the child tunes into you. That is the danger. That's a different kind of thing. Yes?
The crying, this is
like
under
the
ear or
apart? The under ear, I think. Under ear is worse. Under ear is very delicate situation. I'd be very careful under ear. Yeah, the older, let me put this way, there's one rule, is if the child remembers it, it's okay. Well, you don't know, can hurt you. So it's just the opposite of common wisdom. But the truth of the matter is that's why I say under a year is bad, because the child doesn't know, it's just feeling. But the older, if the child remembers it, it's okay. Okay. Yeah. I'm not saying we're
doing it. The child expresses false ideals. It's a media world. Is he correcting their world, or is he like,
oh? Not so important. Don't worry about it. Don't get too involved. Doesn't make a difference. Just think to yourself, 10 years from now, will it make a difference? Probably not. Most of the time, it's not. Don't get too involved. See, to be involved is a bad thing, because that means you're unaware of your own identification. That's what's bad. That's what I'm saying. The less you do over here in many, many areas, the better off you are. Although in certain areas, you've got to be very, very careful. It might not require a lot of doing, but it requires a lot of thinking and a lot of self-understanding. That's what it really requires. That's the hard thing. That's the hard part of it. I mean, that's what it is. Okay. Any other questions?
Yes. Are you unmuted?
It's not a good idea. It's not a good idea. It shows that you didn't really use the right tool. I mean, it's not a good idea to go hot and cold. I mean, it's not a good idea. There means something wrong. I mean, it shouldn't be that you over-discipline a child And I mean, see, again, all these things depend on particular situations. I really can't, you know, get involved in unless I know all the particulars. But if you have to console the child, it means you're overreacting, you're overdid it. Now, should you console it? Depends. If you really did something crazy, I mean, yeah, you might have to do it. But that shouldn't be a normal pattern of discipline. I mean, it shouldn't be happening all the time. Something's wrong. There's one thing out there that, I mean, the only thing consoling is that usually, I can't say all the time, because there are certain mistakes you can make that, like, you know, Shlomo Melch says, everybody thinks that it's never too late. No, sometimes it is too late. You can make mistakes that are, you know, irreparable. I mean, you know, that is true. But it can be turning down. But on the whole, as a matter of consoling you a little bit, most of the time, you know, a couple of mistakes are not going to. It can't be perfect. So a human being has a certain tolerance level. So you're not going to just, you know, it's not like tissue paper. It's not going to just fall apart. You know, you can make mistakes. Everybody's going to make mistakes, and there is a margin there of error, which a human being is capable of absorbing certain negative psychological input. You know, a person does have resilience. We are made out of stern stuff, in a sense. So you don't have to worry, you know, you did the worst thing, you know, one thing. I mean, there's room for error, but you've got to be vigilant. You know, it's not the...
Can I
say
about the claims that we were talking about before? You know, I understand that, like, you shouldn't, like, consciously, you know, make a point of praising the kid or, you know, because you think...
You want to engender certain behavior, right.
But in the sense, like, it should be natural. But if you naturally, you know... Like, it's almost like you're not thinking about what you're saying so much.
Well, good question. Let me get back to this point.
You're not trying to make a point of it, not like a conscious point. It's just like naturally, like for whatever reasons you have, or whatever it is. Like,
let me return to that thing again. See, now what happens in the child's mind when you react with praise? You see? So if it's a natural thing, the child made you happy, and you really feel good naturally. So the child is happy. Why shouldn't the child be happy? I mean, they did something. You know, that's the way life is. It's great. But if you're doing it artificially, the child isn't getting the message that they made you happy. The message they're getting is that they have to. In other words, there's an exchange going on here. I have to do this so you can have that. See, it's not a natural reaction that the child made you happy. If the child really made you happy, so that's a normal thing. The child enjoys that. That's part of life. You know, we all enjoy that. So, nothing wrong with that. That's normal living. But if there's an exchange concept, that's what I meant. Yeah, to praise a child in a planned way, that's an exchange, and the child's going to pick up on that. But this is not just I made my parents happy, I didn't have to do it, I did it, you know. No, I have to do this, because now, if I don't do that, then they're not going to give me this. See? That is the bad message. See, it's also stupid never to make up, that's why I said a rule not to praise, because that's not reality either. The child made you happy, it's okay, and the child's going to feel good as long as the child doesn't feel they had to do that. They didn't have to do that. It's a good thing. There are good things in life. That's normal. But they don't feel they had to. When you're ready with your praise in order to evoke and engender a certain kind of behavior, you're waiting, the child does something, now you give them it. Then they know there's something going on here. See, this isn't a matter of I just have to make my parent happy. This is a matter of my life depends on this. If I don't do this, then that's it. You know? That's the bad thing. That's the point I want to make here. See, that's the bad thing. This communication that the child is tuned into, and like I said, you're not going to be able to control that, because that's a realistic communication. And that communication, if that... There are two ways that it could be perceived. So the same action could look like it's the same, but it's not the same. It's completely different. Completely different. It's always good. A child does something nice and good, and the parent is happy. That's wonderful. So the child knows. So sometimes I do things in life, and I get a very positive response. I didn't have to do it. I did it. That's it. Good. That's a good thing. That means that the child knows that there are good things that happen. That's wonderful. Life isn't always on an even plane. There are good things. There are bad things. That's wonderful. That is life. But life isn't that you have to do something in order to artificially get the love of the parent. That is not life. That is the parent really exercising an insidious control. Okay? Yes? Yeah, and suppose I can understand, he always uses explanation whether it's possible. But it's not possible to always use explanation because a child can't understand things that that the adult knows is good or not good for them. So you can't. That's a bad hang-up to say, I have to explain it. You can't explain everything. There's certain things that you as a parent know, and you just have to impose the rule, and that's it. As long as you're doing it for the child knows that, and even though they don't know why, they know they don't know why. That's nothing wrong with it. You don't have to feel you must explain everything, every theory, and that's why, the child mustn't do this because all kinds of theoretical, if they don't understand it's theoretical, you're harming them. That's absolutely not. That's identification with the child. You're not a child. You have to realize that. Okay. All right. Okay.